Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 174 of the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. I'm Al, and I'm joined by Anton. Hello, Anton.
Hello, Alistair. Also, we're joined by Mike. Oh.
No, we've got no Mike again this week. I nearly said Mike to begin with, but no, we don't have him. He's away honing his topiary skills, creating a 3D replica of the Mona Lisa on a bonsai tree. So, you know, he's got better things to be doing.
Yeah, you know, he needs great concentration, sublime. Nobody's talked to him in at least several weeks from his last incident. So, you know, we can't disrupt that level of concentration for anything. I mean,
he's made it particularly challenging for himself because instead of using those little, like, bonsai shears, he's trying to do it with nail clippers. Don't ask me why, he just is.
Yeah, apparently it's slightly more curved, whatever that means. But nevertheless,
oh dear,
we have a jam-packed episode this week.
We really do. There is a lot to cover. Thankfully, I don't think... Oh no, we have put up some new reviews this week, haven't we, Anton? So we need to talk about some new reviews on the website.
We mentioned them on the last week's episode, but if you haven't checked them out already, we do have a whole bunch of new reviews. That is on our YouTube. I believe we've got the Long Live the Queen, we have Self of the Circle, and there was The Big Journey most recently. So do check them out on the YouTube.
There is a lot to go and check out on there. And of course, we have the usual Patreon, which we plug every week. We will very quickly mention it just now, mostly because we got our new mugs out this week. If you go to nsukp.co.uk/support-us, you can find details of what you get. But there's basically three tiers, £2, £5 and £9 a month, that get you a whole lot of extra bonus content. That is a ton of bonus content, by the way. And for those on the N64 tier, you get a mug every 6 months or so. And this week, Anton, I think we really killed it with the latest mug. It's very, very, very overdue, but it's now finally in everybody's hands, and they're loving it.
Yeah, you know, it's been a mug that we've shown, like, I've personally shown a few people now that we've gotten them, and it's been like, oh, that's cool, and we've got basically this design that's kind of Vine-inspired, that, you know, has a bunch of video game characters on it, and people love having a wee look and seeing what references they can pick out, so... It is a fun one, and it's now in the hands of all our lovely N64 Patreons.
Hand-drawn, by the way, by Anton. Anton did the design for it. It is very cool, and I think we're looking to try and get some pictures of the various mugs and things that we've had on the Mug Club onto the website, aren't we, so people can actually see what we've been creating.
Indeed. Once I've got a free moment, I'm going to get the photo box out and get some lovely photos, so do stay tuned for details and images there.
I can't wait. But you've obviously been very busy. You've not had a chance to get the camera out. Is that because you've been playing tons of games this week?
I wish it was entirely, but I have been playing some games this week. I've been burying myself in Rogue Legacy 2 once again. Can't wait for it to come out on Nintendo Switch. I'm now level 80. I've had the game for 2 weeks. I'm going a little ham on it. I think I'm like 14 hours in, so... I guess that's okay, but still, I'm having quite a lot of fun. I spent a whole while basically going to the wrong, like a really hard biome and dying immediately, basically going to hell. And then I found I could go to the other side, so I basically managed to just blaze through like this water dock place. It was really cool. And I've also got boxing gloves now, so that's very fun.
Of course you do. Naturally. Well, I've played a little bit this week. On the Switch, I've played a bit more Mario Kart 8 on the new courses again. I'm still loving them. I'm so happy to be playing Mario Kart 8 again. It's wonderful. And actually, this afternoon, I picked up Mario Galaxy again for the first time in ages, and I completely forgot where I was. I got one of the, you know, the letters that says, Luigi's gone missing, you need to go find him. And it gives you the screenshot. It's like, I can't remember where that level is. I recognise the level. I have no idea where in the map it was. I'd go on Google to see where he was because it's been so long since I played it and I didn't finish it. So I picked that up this afternoon. I fully intend to play a bit more of that. And I played a bit more of Minecraft on the Xbox with Son because he's so happy they can link up. I can join him in his world on his iPad and Daddy's there and he's very, very happy. So yeah, I've been sort of forced to play a bit of Minecraft. I still don't get it. I keep pressing the wrong buttons. I feel really bad. I was standing at the top of a very big, tall treehouse tower thing he'd built and his pet dog came up and I tried to feed it a bone, but instead of feeding it a bone, I hit it and it fell off and died.
It's a good thing it did fall off because it would have tried to eat you. So, my God. Do let me know if you get the hang of Minecraft. We'd love to play with you sometime.
I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I'm so bad at it, but it keeps him happy, so that's the important thing. Anyway, with so much to talk about, should we leap straight into our news?
Let's go.
Tell us, the people want to know.
First up, Pendulo Studios has announced Tintin Reporter: Cigars of the Pharaoh for the Nintendo Switch, published by Microids. It features an adventure and sort of investigation type gameplay coming out 2023, and this is basically based on the fourth comic that was released for Tintin. What do you think, Anton?
So right now we have a lightly animated trailer, and we've got a couple screenshots that don't allude too heavily to the gameplay of the title. We're very much wait and see with this one. However, what they've shown and how they describe it looks very charming, and I'd like to see a little bit more of it soon.
Charming is probably quite a good word for it. The press release that came out with it basically said it was revolving around investigation and puzzles. So I don't know how much you actually run around in the game, how much of it is just led to you and it's entirely puzzle based. It's really, really difficult to tell from the screenshots. It looks very cinematic. It looks very Tintin. It's very faithful and true to the sort of the original Tintin world and aesthetic and art. It has potential. I don't know how excited I get about Tintin. It's not been an IP that I've ever been particularly fond of, but I realise there's a lot of people out there have very fond memories of Tintin. Where do you stand on it?
Sadly, I've had zero exposure to it, so it sadly means nothing to me, but I recognize the legacy of it.
Fair enough. Our second game comes courtesy of So Romantic, who have announced Jackmove for the Nintendo Switch, published by Hype Train Digital. It's a cyberpunk turn-based RPG coming out on the 20th of September on our console, but it's a weird one because it's coming out on Steam, Epic, and Humble on the 8th, and then on the 20th of September it comes out on the Switch and the Xbox One and the PS4. Not on the 5 or the X and the S. I don't get that, but it looks kind of cool. I'm loving the trailer that they've released for it.
Yeah, it's got some nice charming animation to go along with it. The gameplay is pixelated, top down. It looks quite interesting. It has elements of like when you're kind of wandering around this digital sort of space. And yeah, I'm interested to see what kind of oddities it does and spins it does on the turn-based action. It looks fairly tidy and looks quite fun. So yeah, this is one I'm excited to see some reviews on.
Yeah, some excellent animation at the beginning, very reminiscent of effectively 80s cartoons, that kind of style for the intro visuals, and then it goes into the actual what the game looks like, which they've described it in a phrase I've never heard before, but maybe you tell me that I'm missing something. But have you ever heard of high bit pixel art?
No, but I think what they're kind of alluding at is it's not quite 32-bit, but not quite 16-bit. I think that's the vibe they're going for of it's got a lot more pixels than any of the old consoles could really push, but it's not going for the 32-bit pixelated realism.
Yeah, it's a really weird one, and I really quite like it. It's got a lot of potential, so we'll need to watch that one when it comes out later in the month. Nippon Ichi Software has announced Dysgaea 7, however you want to pronounce it, I have no idea, but it's coming out on the Switch. Isometric strategy turn-based RPG coming out on the 26th of January next year in Japan. Why only Japan, or are we getting it too?
Yeah, so all of the Dysgaea games we've got on Switch, we've had a whole bunch of them. They've always came out in Japan first and then came to Nintendo Switch. So good track record here for us eventually getting it. And they've been doing good with some of their legacy titles to kind of port them and translate them finally. So I would say with 90% certainty, this will be coming to the Western market shortly after its Japanese release. And I won't lie, for such a long-running, iconic RPG, I'm a little bit disappointed by this one. It doesn't look substantially better than anything they've done before. It just looks like more. And that's not a bad thing, but this is meant to be one of the big heavy hitters of the genre. This is not a small franchise, and it just looks like the last couple. So I'm a little bit disappointed, sadly, Al.
Well, that's an interesting one. I don't know where I stand on that because I kind of don't mind it. I kind of get a bit sad when people say that new games have always got to build on the previous one. If something works really, really well, the sort of if it ain't broke, don't fix it approach works for me. I don't mind playing similar games if the story's different, the characters are different, but it's effectively the same mechanics. I've really not got a big problem with it. Things don't need to constantly evolve, because a lot of time people put things into games and they kind of make it worse. And you can think, just leave it as it was. Stop trying to evolve something. So maybe this will be a case of it's already really good, don't mess with it too much, but I guess we will need to find out. Hello Penguin have announced Vernal Edge for the Switch. Published by PID Games, it's a narrative Metroidvania coming soon with some very interesting visuals.
Indeed, I'm quite keen on this one. It looks quite charming. It's, yeah, I think the thing I quite like about it is in this world that seems to be quite, you know, vertical. It's in the air, floating islands, all that sort of jazz. Airships going around. And what I like about that is where a lot of other kind of Metroidvanias try and add this verticality in just normal worlds, and you know, the result of that is you have, you know, castles that are millions of stories tall or caves that just keep on going forever. This one's able to have all of that verticality but keep you like out in the open and keep it sunny and have unique spaces like that. The enemies look quite large and, you know, requiring a degree of tacticalness in terms of taking them on as you're not the most durable. This one's charming.
It is, and I'm intrigued to see what the actual mix of gameplay is, because the vast majority of what we've seen is sort of side-scrolling platform type action, the kind of what you'd expect, but thrown in the middle of it there's this huge big clip where it's sort of 3D, very much PS1 era visuals of very, very low fidelity 3D-ness flying around what look like, I think, airships or something. It's this bizarre mix of stuff, and I can't wait to see how that whole thing holds together, because that's really gripped me. And I'm massively intrigued by their description, because they call it a sword-slashing family drama. That's literally what the press release calls it. So weird, so bizarre, so intrigued.
Yes, very excited to see how they weave this story into the gameplay there.
Can't wait. Okay, Sushi, great name for a developer, by the way. They've re-announced, I think it's probably the best description for it, Fear Effect Reinvented with Nintendo Switch, which I think they first announced back in 2017, if I'm not wrong. But they've re-announced it again anyway. Published by Forever Entertainment, third-person action-adventure shooter, which is coming sooner than you think, according to their release. That's a weird one, Anton.
Indeed. When they announced it back in 2017... they didn't show anything. They just announced that it was in development. So at this point, it kind of hit vaporware status of just, okay, I just presume that's not happening now. But we finally got to see the gameplay in action. And, you know, it doesn't look like a modern game, but they've done a good job of cleaning it up. And overall, I'm quite intrigued by it. It looks fairly smooth. The gunplay looks quite fun. I don't think it's going to be converting anybody who maybe didn't like it or didn't pick it up the first time around. However, I think this might be a title that fans are going to be happy with.
Quite probably. I mean, it's very much 13 in its aesthetic, isn't it? Or XII or whatever, II, whatever that number was. It looks very like that one. Same kind of art style, but it was a good game. And I suspect that you'll probably get a few new players picking this one up because you maybe missed it. And it's been well, as you say, it's been a long time coming, but we'll see when we eventually get it on our screens if it has been worth the wait. Brace Yourself Games have formally announced Rift of Necrodancer for the Nintendo Switch. Not what you might expect, Anton.
Indeed. So you may recall this was loosely announced during the trailer for the most recent Crypt of the Necrodancer DLC. And the premise behind this one seems to be that all the characters that you've known to love in the Crypt of the Necrodancer world have been sucked into some rift and have been transformed into a different genre of game, basically. And it looks to be story-driven, kind of carrying it through. I'm a little confused of what the gameplay is going to be made out of here. Majority of the trailer seems to show a Guitar Hero-like gameplay system, but then there's other bits where it looks like rhythm mini-games, almost like Rhythm Paradise, which I love both of these directions. I just don't know if it's going to be like 80% Guitar Hero and then a little bit of Rhythm Heaven, or is this Guitar Hero section they showed a lot of in their trailer, like just one of many, many different kind of mini game settings.
It's such a weird mishmash, and how they can pull it all together with a story, I have no idea. I mean, is this going to be more like a WarioWare type idea, collection of mini games? It's just off the wall. It's not what I was expecting from Crypt of the NectoDancer people. It's obviously got the IP attached to it. Completely different game. We shouldn't be shocked
Indeed.
by this. I mean, Nintendo has been doing this for years with Mario. Mario's been in every conceivable format you could think of. Why not do with Crypt of the NectoDancer?
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomised genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM, then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And especially curious to see how they tie it together lore-wise, because the Rift seems to be taken quite seriously. However, there's like casual bits of the gang doing yoga and then hitting, you know, musical notes at the right time. So I don't know if they're going to be in of this world for a very long time. There's some kind of visual novel bits of kind of clicking through and having the character dynamics unfold. I have high confidence that through, you know, Crypt of the NectoDancer and Cadence of Hyrule, it'll be a solid title. I'm just want to see what the composition of this title's like.
I'm sure you won't have to wait long. We will find out imminently, I suspect. Keep watching this space. Next up, All Interactive and Just Add Water have announced BPM. That's not what you might think it is. It's not beats per minute, that's bullets per minute. That is actually the title. BPM, Bullets Per Minute for the Nintendo Switch, published by Playtonic Friends. It's a rhythm first-person shooter with motion controls. Basically think Doom to a beat. Come here on the 8th of September for £20 or £19.99. What do you make of this?
I am so, so happy about this. This was a game that has been around in the indie scene for years, and we even covered it like, God, like 2018-19, and it was like, I believe the devs were like, oh, it would be cool if we had it on the Switch, but you know the performance, and you know the Switch doesn't have that many players yet, and here we are, we've finally got it. It's coming out for what I think is a fair price. It's got some fun rock music, the gameplay's slightly Doom Quake inspired, but with rhythm elements. I'm in love with this. This looks great. And then they threw in motion controls to just make it even more extreme.
Yeah, so much motion control, so much extreme noise, action, just, it looks cool. And I particularly love it at one point when they start sort of air guitar shredding on a shotgun, because why wouldn't you? It is cool, and it does look really, really good on Switch. I don't know how they've managed to get it run the way they have, but it looks gorgeous. I don't think I'm going out to the bounds of reality by saying this, but I do think it's one of the better looking first person shooters that we've seen.
Indeed, and what makes me hopeful is with it being a rhythm game, they just need to keep the performance good. So the fact they've managed to get it looking, running at a good frame rate, looking good, I'm very impressed, and I get the impression they must have been working on this one for a good while.
I reckon so. We also got some news this week from Ubisoft and Nintendo about Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hope. They are releasing, well, some versions of it. A bit like the last version of Mario Rabbids we got, we're also getting a season pass. But in addition to the season pass, we're getting a gold edition, which includes the season pass and the Galactic Prestige Collection, and it's all getting a bit complicated, Anton.
Indeed. So the Galactic Prestige Collection is basically just your simple pre-order bonus, nothing too important in there. We don't know what the DLCs will be, but the fact it's got a season pass, I'm intrigued by, because with the last Mario & Rabbids, They did a season pass, but they only released one DLC. You should have just released a DLC if it's going to be a DLC. You know, it's indeed a bit pointless.
Well, the internet kind of has its speculations about what at least the first DLC is going to be, because the artwork for the season pass is very reminiscent of Mario Galaxies, particularly the Mario Galaxies, I'm going to say the theme song or something to do with the music. It is drawing a lot of speculation.
You know, it makes sense with the setting being in space and us having rabid Rosalina. It would be a sensible direction to go in. Obviously, they've kind of ticked off the Donkey Kong direction, and, you know, I guess they could do Yoshi, who knows? But I think building on the established Mario lore would probably be the most sensible route for Ubisoft to go.
I think so. Very exciting. I can't wait for that game to come out. We don't have that much longer. It's, what, 20th of October, I think? So that's two months away. It's not that far. It's exciting stuff. Okay, Nintendo also this week streamed a Treehouse Live on the 25th of August, and it featured some Splatoon 3 gameplay. So we saw single player, we saw Splatfest Primer, and we saw Harvestella gameplay. Did you watch it?
I actually did not. I was meant to research that before the podcast, but I'm very awful.
To be fair, I didn't watch it either, but then as much as there's a lot of hype for Splatoon 3, I'm not on the hype train yet. I don't know why. Everyone else around about us, everyone on the Discord seems to be getting on board, but for whatever reason, I just can't get into Splatoon. It's fine, but I'm not hyped about it in the slightest, to the point where I'm going to watch a Treehouse on it. I gather, though, however, it was quite well received.
Yeah, I have been seeing people quite chuffed, especially for the single player. You know, Splatoon 2's single player, like Splatoon 1's, kind of had afterthought energy, but they did then do the Octo expansion, which elevated it up a whole bunch more. And it seems like they've got the budget of the original campaigns, but then with the revised gameplay of the Octo expansion, and that seemingly made a much better combination. So who knows? I'm excited. I would love it for the campaign to be a lot more than just an afterthought for the Splatoon franchise, and maybe a driving force, so you have the people that buy it for the multiplayer and, you know, will spend half their life in it, as will I when it hopefully launches soon. And you'll have the people that can just pick it up, play the single player, and feel like they've got their money's worth.
Indeed. This next story, I'm going to have to take a deep breath for and calm myself before reading it, because I'm already angry and have not started talking about it. So, the free-to-play Disney Dreamlight Valley game that we've mentioned a couple of times in the podcast is coming out with a paid early access. So the free game, you can pay to play it before it's released. And we're not even talking like a little amount of money here. If you want to play just a standard game before it's released, you've got to pay $30. And for the privilege, you get early access, you get 2 wearable items, 9 decorations, and 3 design motifs. So basically, you get nothing of any value whatsoever. If you want to pay $50 and get the deluxe edition, you get all that stuff and a turtle companion and some wearable clothes and some decorations and some more design motifs and a Disney mini Mickey Mouse donut headband or something like that for your character. Again, nothing of any real value there. And that's not it. You can pay $70 for the Ultimate Edition to get early access and a few more things, some Regal Fox companion and some more wearables and some more decorations and some more motifs and the donut headband. I'm sorry, this is a free-to-play game that they want you to pay £70 to play before it's released and give you junk. Anton, I am fuming about this. I mean, what the... Ah!
Yeah, this is some of the worst microtransactions we've seen on a console game, or at least on Nintendo Switch. The audacity here. You know, even, you know, Fortnite, you spend like a tenner and you get like a whole new brand new character that plays slightly differently and looks entirely differently. You know, you're paying like 80 quid or 70 quid for the Ultimate Edition and you're getting like a t-shirt for your character, which really makes me wonder how much the microtransactions are going to be in the game. Is it going to be like 20 quid for a t-shirt? I doubt it. So basically, they're charging you the privilege of basically being a beta tester, the early adopter that goes in and finds all the bugs before they release it to the mainstream and make all their money via microtransactions. It's awful. I feel like it's just like, you know, the game's like launching like a couple months. I wonder if it's maybe needing delayed and they're like, okay, how do we get people not to play it until it's ready? Here we are. It's released on time. We tell the shareholders that we're milking our consumers dry, and then we get to release it slightly later when it's ready.
I mean, it's bordering on immoral. It's also not criminal, but Jesus, just so, it makes me so angry that they're making you pay to access a free-to-play game before it's ready, and they're giving you junk in response. I mean, Gameloft, I'm just really angry with Gameloft. I wasn't particularly interested in this game anyway. It's not aimed at me. I'm not their core audience. But I want to go out of my way to stop people playing this game now. I'm just livid about it. It's just... Arr, can you tell I'm annoyed, Anton?
Yeah, this is just absolutely ridiculous. I'm just astounded. Like, I get, you know, there's a sales proposition to be made of charging for early access in a starter kit. You know, they do starter kits for free-to-play games. Fortnite, Rocket League, Apex Legends, they have these starter kits.
That's fine. I have no objection to that. That makes sense to me. That's okay.
Yeah.
That gets you stuff to get going. Fine. You don't need this, it's a help.
But this is just awful value. Like, to be honest, usually the starter kits for a new player is usually the most cost-effective way to get into a game. You know, you're buying a physical version of Fortnite, you're getting a good little wee kit here, you're getting the Joker right off the bat. But this, you're getting absolutely nothing. Like, a t-shirt is like a basic item. That's like the starting one before you get your Mickey Mouse outfit.
It's just tat. It's utter. There's nothing of any use. There's nothing in it that helps you in the game progress. There's nothing that helps you do anything. It's just decorations for an eye-watering amount of money, and you get the privilege of being a beta tester. Oh, I think we need to move off this before my blood pressure goes through the roof and I kind of either turn into the Hulk or I turn blue and pass out. One of the two. Something's going to happen here if we don't move on. So let's talk about Sony PlayStation for a moment. It's not normally what we talk about in the podcast, but Sony have increased the price of the PlayStation 5, which in the current environment and climate and economic stuff, I can kind of understand. Things cost a lot of money to make. But the good news is Nintendo have come out saying that they're not going to increase their price. They have no plans to do it. Hurrah!
Indeed, finally, a good move for Nintendo. Nintendo's always been a bit fussy about getting their price in the hotspots. Like, there's a couple prices in the industry that's just like, wow, you know, that sells well. Like, $299 sells real good, $150 sells good. You know, there's no point having your console, like, you know, $320. You may as well try and hit it right on the head at $300. And Nintendo's always been fussy about that, so I understand their degree to lock it in, but to be honest, I think people would have revolted if Nintendo put up their prices. I've seen it a little bit with the PS5. They're like, you're just charging me more for a 2-year-old console? Nintendo couldn't get away with that.
Well, that is about to be my point, because the Switch has got cheaper and cheaper and cheaper for them to make in general. So as much as costs for bits have gone up, the bits that Nintendo are buying are older bits, because the Switch has now been around for about 5 years. So it's not got that same new leeway that, say, Sony has. Sony's got a PlayStation that is in high demand, that is in low supply, and they can afford to put the price up a bit. Nintendo can't really afford to do that, and as you say, they would have been outcry. So, that's some good news. I've calmed down. But I think my blood pressure is about to spike again on this next story. So, De Novo by Erdito, or Detto, however you pronounce the name, which, if you're in the PC gaming space, you might have heard of these guys before. If you're not in that space, they are a company that makes DRM protection, so copyright stuff. Basically stop you from pirating stuff. They are releasing software to developers of Nintendo software that they can include in their games to stop piracy on the Switch. That, in theory, sounds like a really good system. I haven't got a problem with that, because piracy it kills consoles. It means that people spend a lot of time and effort and money making games that which people then play for free. I'm not on board with that. When I was much younger, I may have acquired some music off the internet that I may not have paid for. I may have acquired the odd movie I may or may not have paid for. I acknowledge that was wrong, and thankfully a whole load of industry sprung up around Netflix and Spotify that actually let you get these things legitimately for a reasonable price. That's all good. Video games still get pirated really, really heavily. So in theory, I've not got a problem with this, but on PC, gamers roundly hate this software because it is at least claimed by them and refuted by the developers that it massively increases RAM usage and degrades CPU performance and generally hampers your games. So, Anton, who's right? The developers right that it doesn't do any of that, or the gamers right that it does, and where do you stand on it?
So, it's awful for many, many reasons. So, firstly, the way Denuvo has put this out into the world as preventing emulation. So that's the first point we'll tackle, where they're saying it's preventing emulation of Nintendo Switch games and preventing piracy. Firstly, emulating games is not illegal. It can be readily claimed. You can rip your own games and you should be able to run your own games on your own hardware, whatever piece of hardware that you're using. You know, to emulate Nintendo Switch games, you already need to rip your own keys and authentication codes from your own personal Switch. So you're running your own games on your own keys on your own hardware. So already there, they're on shaky ground. There is so much evidence that, especially when Rage 2 launched, that this software is awful. It can degrade, you know, take a game that should be running at like 60 frames per second and knock you down into the 30s. Just so they prevent you from not pirating it. However, in an ideal world, you know, having, you know, some piracy prevention, even if you had the hardware headroom to run it, maybe there's something there. But this is on a handheld gaming device. DRM requires a connection to the internet. And there's already a few single-player games on Nintendo Switch with DRM, such as Trails Rising. And it just makes them absolutely awful on the go because you need an internet connection to authenticate that it's a real copy. And the Switch just doesn't have the headroom to be losing performance. You know, Rage 2, I think, was like 2017. It was a PS4 and Xbox One era title, and it was hitting the performance on like big gaming PCs. I hate to see what the results are going to be like on Nintendo Switch, and the idea of DRM on a handheld is absolutely awful, and the veil that they're putting it in of preventing emulation is a feeble house of cards in of itself. It's just awful in so many degrees.
So you might be wondering, why have Nintendo been doing this? This is terrible.
Yep, Nintendo's very much came out and be like, we have nothing to do with this, which I am so glad to hear Nintendo say this, especially as the anti-piracy boys. I could have seen them being right on that, but nope, apparently this is a demand from Erudito, existing clients, so people that have been maybe using it for, you know, their Xbox or PS4 ports, or maybe their PC ports. They've been like, can we have this for the Switch too? You know, four people like emulated their own copies of their own games on their own hardware.
It's just one of these stories that makes you just get really irritated, but I'm back angry again. I'm about to turn green.
Yeah, like I have used emulation and I've seen the community. It is so little people are actually pirating Switch games because it's so hard to do. It's the scene's non-existent. You're probably preventing, like, you know, for like a couple hundred, couple maybe a thousand at max people of $1 million or million copy sellers. It's such a small user base that are going through those hoops, and the people that are going through those hoops are just going to find new hoops to go through.
Indeed. Shall we move on and talk about some of the stuff that was talked about at Gamescom 2022? Because there was a couple of interesting releases there.
Yeah, I think a little palate cleanser for us could do us some good.
Absolutely. Okay, so SMG Studios and Dev I'm choosing to pronounce it that way because it's fun games. They've announced Moving Out 2 for the Switch, which is coming, it's being published by Team 17. It's the sequel to the four-player couch co-op game that we know and love from, was it last year, 2 years ago? Been out for a while now. The sequel's coming out in 2023. This one has internet connectivity and lets you play online and moves around in different realms, and it just looks awesome.
Indeed, you know, Moving Out was one of my favorite co-op games when it first launched, and very early in the podcast, in fact. I remember us like picking it up and being like, this is it. And it has went on to be very successful. Our intuition is very good on that instance. It's been wrong many times. Anyway, this one looks like it's taking it up a notch. It looks far more expansive. It looks fun. It looks chaotic. I'm excited to get my hands on this one. And God, if we were all ever in the same room, this is definitely one we would need to bring along.
It would be brilliant. And the nice thing about this one is, although they expanded it, they basically retained the same core mechanic. It looks like you're playing the same game, but bigger. And that is good. It looks fantastic. They've not tried to sort of break the formula or anything too wacky. They've taken what was great and just made it a bit bigger and a bit more expansive. And it just looks wonderful. I cannot wait. Gearbox Software announced New Tales of the Borderlands for Nintendo Switch, published by 2K, a narrative adventure game coming out 21st of October this year. We have very quickly gone from this being a rumour to being a formally announced game, Anton, because we literally talked about this in last week's show.
Indeed. I'm quite excited about this. You know, Borderlands 3 came out and it kind of got a lukewarm reception. Now, you know, people enjoyed it, but it wasn't quite the Holy Grail sequel to Borderlands 2 that some people are expecting. And then Tiny Tina's Wonderland came out and it killed it. It was fantastic. You know, they just got the tone right. And I get the feeling that this is going to be leaning a lot more to Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, you know, really understanding the appeal. Because the original one was really, really good, and this one's getting done in-house at 2K. So I think the bar's only, you know, the sky is only the ceiling. You know, we've got so much potential here, and it looks fairly fun. It does take itself a little bit serious in the trailer, which got me a little bit nervous, but then they had a gun with legs, and I was back on board.
A gun with legs insulting people, nonetheless. It was so good. And the bit that makes me more excited even further is a lot of the development team are the same development team that worked on the Telltale game of the original Tales from the Borderlands. It's the same people. That game was a hit. That gives me a lot of confidence that this one is going to do well. It's exciting. And as I said, kind of come out of nowhere. Although we talked about it last week, it went from nothing to rumour to in existence in the space of, what, a week.
Incredible. How the seasons change.
Wonderful. Okay, Nintendo have shared that... we've talked about that one already, Al. Let's try this one instead. So it's a very difficult name to pronounce, but I'm going to give it my best. Dwarf Romantic, I think. It's getting a release date on the 29th of September, and it looks so relaxing.
Indeed, and you're right on the money there. This is a game I've played on PC. It's real solid. When they announced it, literal millennia ago, when we were black in black and white colours, this looked like a fairly good game, but lacking gameplay. It was like a good early access. It was fun and zen. This game has evolved and changed so much since then. It has become just more complete. It's a whole product now. And although we've had to wait quite a while for it to come to Nintendo Switch, it feels like it's ready now. I feel like it's ready for prime time, and I'm very excited to be able to play it on the go.
Yeah, I was trying to remember. I knew we'd seen this before, but I couldn't think when we talked about it. If it was recently or ages ago. It's one of these games that I just remember seeing, because it's got a very distinct visual to it, and I'm thinking, that looks so cute and calming. But yeah, so it has been kicking around for a wee while. You've played it. You recommend it. It's going to be good when it comes out.
Absolutely. Do give it a go.
Wonderful. Okay, let's talk about Monkey Island, because we are all talking about the return to Monkey Island. We're very excited about coming out, and we now have a release date of the 19th of September with a pre-order bonus, which is horse armor, huh?
Yeah, this is a fun one. This is a good old reference, if you don't recall. One of the biggest scandals of the 2000 was when Bethesda tried to charge money for horse armor. They didn't even charge a lot. I think it was like four quid, but the internet went up in flames, because we were so used to, not even the internet, games, journalism, and magazines went up in flames because, you know, we were used to expansion packs back then. It really was the golden age of expansions. Nevertheless, they've added this horse armor. It's a great throwback reference. It serves zero function in the game, and it's just an item you get to have in your inventory.
It's so wonderful. It's so tongue-in-cheek. It makes me happy. I love it when games companies do these kinds of fun things, and it's got us all talking about it even more. So yeah, 19th of September, it's not far away. Can't wait. The next story is Soul Left Afield, I don't even know how to begin. I'm just going to read it. Mini has showcased a mini Pokemon crossover with the Mini Aceman concept car. It's an electric mini with a screen in the middle that shows Pikachu. And that's about all we know about it. It's the weirdest announcement. What?
Yeah, so I believe the Mini Aceman, their illustration of a next generation mini electric car. They have some, however, they're working on the next generation. Yeah, I think what they've done here is they had a concept car that, to be honest, looks exactly like their existing car outside of the internal interior. So they've slapped Pokemon on it so people will actually write about it. It's charming, it's dumb, it's cute, it will never exist.
It's just bonkers and vague and, I mean, weird. But we're talking about Mini on a video games podcast, so sure, it's worked for them.
They got us.
Yeah, weird. Okay, Hogwarts Legacy. Are you looking forward to it? Because I think it looks pretty cool.
So, I have no nostalgia for the Harry Potter franchise. Haven't watched the movies, haven't read the books. Have my grievances for the creator. However, when they did their 20-minute walkthrough, I was like, wow, that looks like a good video game. They've really put together something here. And then they've done this new gameplay here that's showcasing the dark arts. And for me personally, I felt they took something that looked quite expansive and interesting and diluted it to just something generic.
Interesting. Because I know a lot of people were fascinated by some of the stuff that came out in it. Playing around the dark arts, you can torture your friends and all kinds of really weird, dark stuff. You wouldn't necessarily expect from a Hogwarts, Harry Potter type game. They're firmly saying that this game is not really aimed at kids. This is a Harry Potter game for adults, or at least, you know, adolescents and up.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm excited to see what comes of this title overall. It's done by Avalanche. And Avalanche, you know, their previous franchise, Just Cause, is a love it or you hate it title. I do love it, so maybe that will be it. But, you know, this gameplay here to me just showed off a lot of action. And I thought what looked quite innovative of the title was the school, the RPG elements, the going to class element, the, you know, being enveloped in this world. And I fear that if it takes off and just shoves you in a corner to do action in the woods, it'll maybe lose that. But only time will tell to see what the complete composition and makeup of this title is like. And how much you spend doing everything. You know, who knows if it's maybe, you know, almost like Spider-Man-esque of having to balance your heroing and life balance. Maybe that's quite exciting. Almost like Persona, to use a more video game relevant reference.
Indeed. If you've not watched it, go check out the new gameplay trailer that dropped. It's probably worth watching. Let's jump into Turbo Mode.
Yes.
So, first up, Baskin-Robbins is now selling Splatoon ice cream, which is Ikasu soda and grape flavour. Cool. Tiny Build has acquired various Bossa Studios IPs, such as Surgeon Simulator, I Am Fish and I Am Bread for $3 million. Embracer Group, who we talked about last week, has completed its acquisition of Crystal Dynamics, Eidos Montreal, Square Enix Montreal, and over 50 IPs, including Tomb Raider, Deus Ex, Thief and Legacy of Kain. Amazon was going to make a bid for EA, however the leak surged the stock and it blocked Amazon purchasing them. Masahiro Sakurai has shared his final daily Super Smash Bros. Ultimate screenshot. Oh. And Sakurai's also started a new YouTube channel, woohoo, called Masahiro Sakurai on Creating Games. Awesome. Splatoon 3 has got a new, well, massive staircase mural in Seoul, which is the capital of South Korea, if you don't know. Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak has sold more than 4 million copies. Nintendo shares a glimpse of a new battle stadium in Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. The new mode includes casual battles, ranked battles, online competitions, and rental teams. Flashback 2 has narrowed in on a 2023 release date. SpongeBob SquarePants, the Cosmic Shake, has got a new gameplay trailer. A Little to the Left gets a new gameplay trailer as well. Teslagrad 2, which does look gorgeous, by the way, gets a new trailer and a release in a release date in spring 2023. Sonic Frontiers has got a new story trailer and on-the-floor gameplay. Minecraft Legends has got a new gameplay trailer. That's a lot of trailers coming out. Concerned Ape has shared a screenshot, hooray, something different, of Haunted Chocolatier. And despite fan speculation that Shiver from Splatoon 3 would be Nintendo's first major non-binary character, Nintendo of America has confirmed that Shiver identifies as female and will use the she/her pronouns in the game. God, there was a lot to talk about there, Anton. Where do you want to start?
Yes, to skim through, and then I'll end on one that I'll dwell on for a little. I'm slightly disappointed to hear the news from Nintendo, obviously, if that was the intentions, the plan there. However, I had hoped that Nintendo was starting to move stuff forward there, but maybe another game. Minecraft Legends is looking great. A Little to the Left is a charming new indie game about basically just tweaking stuff. It's I've seen it colloquially called a ODS, not an ODST. I'm forgetting the term, but basically, very panicky in getting things just right and, you know, making sure that picture is just level. SpongeBob the Cosmic Shake looks brilliant, and I do think the Master Hero Sakurai YouTube channel is interesting timing, as it came out just after Hideo Kojima announced that he would be doing a podcast. And it's kind of interesting that those two events happened at the same time. My God, Embracer Group's going to own everything. And then to dwell on one, Sonic Frontiers has Big the Cat. I am sold on it. The gameplay looks really good. People that have been playing it have been really enjoying it. My God, I can't believe they've brought me back in. How about yourself, Al?
Well, that's good to hear, because last week when we mentioned Sonic Frontiers, you were still very unsure. So it's quite nice to know you've been pulled back in the direction of this could be the hit that you hope it might be, but fear it might not be. So that's kind of positive. The ones I want to talk about, I guess, well, yeah, one was the Sakurai YouTube channel. I think that is so cool. I'm fascinated to see where he takes Masahiro Sakurai on creating games, because that has so much potential. Is it just going to be purely retrospective? Is he going to be basically teaching people how he did it? Is he maybe going to develop a game through the channel? That would be so cool. I can't see it happening, because just that would be a minefield, but I think that would be awesome. I really look forward to hopefully watching that. I'm presuming and hoping it's going to have subtitles. Otherwise, I'm going to be completely confused and have no idea what's going on. But the main one I was interested in was Amazon wanting to buy EA. So I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think Amazon owns any games development companies, do they?
You would be loosely right. They have Amazon Game Studios. Amazon Game Studios is a publisher that has ran since the launch of the Amazon Fire TV and has owned a couple of studios. They made a couple things, bits and pieces, for their Amazon Fire TV OS. Nothing too substantial, but then I went on to create a couple MMOs. There was a Grand Tour video game for Xbox and PS4. However, haven't quite found the success. I believe they're currently working on a Lord of the Rings MMO.
I think I'm glad they didn't manage to buy EA. I'm not the biggest fan of EA, as most people are, because EA, and particularly because they treated the Switch so badly. But I'm fascinated to know why Amazon was interested in buying them. Do they have designs in trying to compete with Apple Arcade or Google Stadia? I mean, are they trying to move into that space? Or were they simply wanting to buy it because they thought it was a good way of making money? Just, hey, let's make video games. Why not? We're already an internet company. Why not make games? It's just a really interesting sidestep for them.
Yeah, so currently Amazon's main contribution to gaming can be found in two folds. They run a streaming service by the name of Amazon Luna that launched maybe 6 months after Google Stadia and is basically a complete copy of the same idea, borrows a lot of the similar kind of distribution methods of having a controller that connects directly to the cloud and then connecting the TV as a separate parallel stream to the cloud for better latency. And yeah, their Luna subscription service seems to be their main push at the moment. However, hasn't quite found the same love of many of the other parties in the industry. They're also doing something quite new, and that is called, I believe, Alexa Game Control. We don't know what it was, but it got leaked during Gamescom via the Dead Island 2 trailer. So wait and see what that is, but probably Amazon Luna is their main push at the moment.
Fascinating. So I think that was probably the main interesting thing for me this week. I mean, the OCD level of is just insane when it comes to that cozy organization, what's called the Little to the Left. It just looks so brilliant and awful at the same time, just lining up every pencil, every book, everything is just so. It could be very relaxing. It could be really annoying. I can't quite decide. And the last thing I'll very quickly mention is the was it Haunted Chocolatier? There's a new screenshot. It looks cute. It doesn't give much away. All I know is there's a boss fight where you're fighting a giant bee inside what looks like a honeycomb. That's all we know from it. I'm fascinated to know how that ties into the story because I don't remember there being any boss fights in, Stardew Valley. So he's got boss fights in his new game. It's different.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that game goes. Concerned Ape is one dedicated developer, and I'm sure whatever they put their head towards is going to be excellent.
Absolutely. Okay, that's us done with the news. It's time to move into the realms of speculation with rumours.
Now, I'm not normally one for gossip, but...
So, only one this week, and it is about Splatoon 3. So, a datamine of the Splatoon 3 world premiere demo has found the first ever official map of the Splatoon world.
Indeed, obviously a slightly smaller story to close out our podcast on. However, it's quite novel. It kind of looks very much Earth-inspired. It, you know, to be honest, looks like I've seen people describing it almost as like an Earth that has progressed a little, almost like the continents have shifted. Everything's just a little bit off. But, you know, who knows? It's basically Earth, but stylized.
It's just such a random find, but okay, why not? And that's it. That's all of our rumours. We haven't really got anything else to talk about this week, but it's been another bumper episode. We've been talking for the last 50 minutes because there's just so much going on at the moment. We went through a dry spell when it was thin pickings for stories, but recently there has been a glut of them, Anton.
Indeed. There's so much else going on, so if you have any indie games that you're particularly excited about, do check out their socials, because there's been a lot of stuff that's been present at Gamescom, especially in the indie spaces that have just been there, ready to play. So do check it out and see if your favourite game has gotten some new gameplay or, you know, being shared around with press, because there's a lot moving on and there'll be a lot more moving on as we go through the busy fall season and get close to the Game Awards season. Very exciting.
Absolutely. And if you're not already full of content, then please go and have a look at our YouTube channel to search for Nintendo Switch UK podcast on the YouTube, where you'll find dozens of reviews. We must be getting close to 100 reviews, I suspect. There's a lot of reviews on there. We have been busy. Anton's looking at me like, it's nowhere near 100. Don't be stupid. There's a lot on there. We have much, much content. Go check out the Patreon and the website if you're interested in supporting us. If you just want to drop an email, it's podcast@nsukp.co.uk. We're on Twitter @nsukpodcast. Anything else, Anton?
Yeah, I think right on the money. To check out the Patreon, nsukp.com/support-us. We do the prequel Last Call, the Roundup, Mug Club, which has just had a new one go out, which is quite exciting. And show notes early. You get a woohoo. We get a Discord. The woohoo is not like The Sims, don't worry. It's more celebratory woohoo. And I think that's a good point to close the podcast on.
Goodness gracious me, that was busy. Okay, cheerio.
Au revoir.